In this week of recalling events from the past year and the past decade, I remembered a story from about 2 years ago. It was a bit more of a local story, or maybe a regional story. It was something that involved all of us who lived in this area of the country. I was thinking about the drought of 2007, the great big drought that we lived through 2 years ago. I remember hearing on the news that it was the worst drought that we had experienced in 100 years. I couldn't personally verify that, but it certainly was the most significant drought that I had experienced in my life. And I think I'm fascinated in thinking back to it, because this was one of those life events that really impacted each one of us and drew out the connections a little bit, our connections to one another, and certainly to the created world, to God's earth. We were suddenly very aware of how vulnerable we were and just how much we needed something that at the time we didn't have. I remember hearing stories at the time that it would take many years to get back to the levels of replenishment, to where we were no longer in a state of drought. Actually, at the 7:30 this morning, I asked people if they knew exactly where we were on this, because I didn't know, to let me know. And a newcomer came up to me afterwards, introduced herself, and said, "And by the way, we are 2.5 inches low still." And then at the 9 o'clock service, someone who works in this field came up to me and said that the drought officially ended in December. So it was a real open source experience this morning. So I've learned a little bit. But I remember what it was like as we experienced this drought a couple years ago. I remember how dusty and dry it was. I remember it was kind of, we were filled with despair. Was this going to end? Of course, our lawns, trees all looked pretty terrible. My neighbor's trees, actually, just, they were young trees and they died. In part because my neighbor didn't water even when they were allowed to. But I remember the experience of that. I remember when it finally rained for just a couple of days, how incredible that felt. Best rainstorm I've ever seen. It felt as if we could breathe again. That was how I felt. I actually had a dream during the drought, and I really shouldn't share this with you, but I actually dreamed one day that I drove my car across the country so that I could legally wash it. I probably shouldn't tell you that, but it's true. Of course, this drought, which we went through, was very inconvenient, was a great challenge. But you know, for farmers, and for people whose lives and livelihood really depended on it, it was a devastating experience. And it reminded me of all those news stories that I've seen growing up, and of course we still see when a drought hits a developing country. It's dangerous, it's deadly, it's tragic. And this experience helped me to see that. It helped me to remember not only was water a symbol of life, we talk about living water, there's good reason for that, but it was also something, water is something that we need for life. Water is something that we need for life. And it's something that we need for parts of our lives that we want to see grow. You know, I talked about lawns and trees and things like that, which are important parts of the beauty of our world, but all of a sudden weren't doing well because there was no water to be had. Well, Jeremiah, in the reading that we read this morning, is speaking to a people in a spiritual drought. He's speaking to a group that we call the remnant. These are the people of Israel who have been exiled for many generations and were finally returning to a spiritual home, returning to God. To say that these people have been in a dry spell is a great oversimplification, but it is rooted in truth. They have become cut off from the source of life. Through time, through generations, through distance, through losing a sense of their identity. And so they were a people who had become defined by the fact that they were in mourning, that they were longing, they were people longing to return to God from these places of sadness and loss and alienation. And I think we can connect our lives to what they were going through in those places where we feel cut off from the source of our life. Jeremiah tells us that God makes a promise to these people as they begin the journey home. God's promise is this, that their life shall become like a watered garden. Their life shall become like a watered garden. Now, I think that to fully understand the meaning and the beauty and maybe even the sheer audacity of a promise like that, it helps to see it through this lens of drought, of what it means to go without. Whether it's just the drought we live through, or thinking of this spiritual drought that the Israelites had lived in. To understand what it means when God says that your lives shall become like a watered garden. A garden is a place where these seeds of God, where these gifts can be nurtured, and where they can bear fruit. But a garden that doesn't have water, and a garden where we don't do any of the work of cultivation, it's very hard. Some of those seeds will sprout, but most won't. Thomas Merton wrote this, and I apologize for the gendered language. He wrote, "Every moment and every event in every man's life on this earth plants something in his soul. For just as the wind carries thousands of winged seeds, so each moment brings with it germs of spiritual vitality that come to rest imperceptibly in the minds and wills of men. Most of these unnumbered seeds perish and are lost because men are not prepared to receive them. For such seeds as these cannot spring up anywhere except in the good soil of freedom, spontaneity, and love." And when I talk about a garden, a watered garden, I think we can think of it as one of these places of freedom, spontaneity, and love, where these seeds, these gifts that God give us, can grow. This is the promise that God made to the people as they began the journey home, so that they could have this image, something in front of them, as they began to travel. So these people who had been cut off, how did they travel? And what did they do when they got to where they were going, when they returned home? I think it can be helpful to understand their journey and to understand how they re-entered this garden by looking at how they traveled, what it means to be on the journey, what it means to travel. The psalmist writes of the life that comes from being on the journey itself and to recognizing the value of being on the journey. The text is, "Happy are the people whose hearts are set on the pilgrim's way." As we heard it sung, "Happy are those who journey to Zion." Happy are those whose hearts are set on the pilgrim's way. A pilgrim, I think, is someone who is on a journey and knows it, and realizing how important it is to be on that journey. It isn't happy are those pilgrims, well, they'll be happy when they get there. It's happy are those who are on the pilgrim's way and who know that as they move through their lives, as they move through the world, there are always moments in front of us to be looking for where God is. These are the people, the psalmist says, who can find springs in the desolate valley where other people may not know to look. Doesn't mean that the valley wasn't dark and desolate and scary. It just means that those who are on this pilgrim's way know how to look for places of light, for places of life, where perhaps others miss it. And of course, Jeremiah writes about how they travel, about how the Israelites were led back home. He says that they were led by brooks of water, by water brooks, that they could walk alongside to take where they are, to take them home. And I'm thinking about the imagery of that and the watered garden, so that these almost like arteries and capillaries that lead towards the heart of God. We have these brooks, these streams, guiding the Israelites, leading them back home to this place, this lush garden, this place of spiritual growth. God gives them a vision to follow and a way to get there. And of course, when they get there, they've learned new skills simply by being on the pilgrim's way, by learning how to look for those places of light and life along the way on the journey. Once they're in the garden, they become master gardeners. They know what it means to cultivate. They know what it means to trust God, because a garden won't grow without water. They know what it means to be in relationship with God and with God's world. They know that sometimes cultivation takes work and learning and patience. This is what it means to be on God's time. God's promise to the remnant of Israel, to those returning from places of loss and sadness, is that their lives will become like a watered garden. They will eat fruits and vegetables that they have never tasted, even though it was the food of their ancestors. They will see and smell flowers that until then they had only heard about in songs and in stories. Perhaps only a people who had lived so long in this state of spiritual drought could fully appreciate the beauty and the wonder of a promise like this. Of course, this promise, which was made to them and is made to us, it isn't simply a gift. It isn't just a Christmas present. This promise is an invitation to a life of cultivation. Not just a journey to this place of freedom, spontaneity, and love, where the seeds of God's grace can be nurtured and grow. It isn't just about the journey, but it's an invitation to live fully in the midst of that place. Once we're there, as we celebrate the birth of Christ, may we each become more and more aware of this invitation, so that we might fully enjoy the fruits of the rich gardens of our lives. Amen.